search. Each man different, living his own way, searching, discovering numero uno.
Welcome, BBCers, to episode number 168 of the Broken by Concept podcast, the number one solo cue educational and motivational podcast. Curtis, people last week were a little bit upset that I didn't do the intro for the motivational podcast because it was a motivational episode. The title was literally our most motivational episode yet. We're going to come out with you guys with some more motivation here. We're on the motivation arc of the Broken by Concept here, Curtis. We're getting back into the motivation.
Actually saw a comment about, you know, how motivation is BS and stuff. Mm. And we are both massively, you know, for discipline, right? The whole motivation versus discipline.
Yeah.
I get that. I am on board with that. I am fully on board with that. Mm. Hence the emphasis on process. The way I like to view motivation, though, in general, it's kind of like the kickstarting the car, right? You need that initial boost, right?
And then you get into the momentum.
Then you get the process rock and roll
regime.
That's right.
Yeah.
So motivation is useless for the people that are rock and rolling on their process a lot of the time. But for the people that need that initial kickstart,
that boost,
it can be, you know, what someone needs a lot of the time.
Other words like inspiration. Like, yeah. You know, it could be even something for like a new way of thinking about a champion. You like watch, maybe you're like really stuck, bogged down.
Get inspired, man.
With your champion. You're like, you know, you watch like some, you know, Z99 playing Zed, you're like, dude, I'm inspired. You know, like that can be a kickstart of like, okay, now I can get into
shift
the
your mindset into a different,
100%. Super important. So we were initially going to start this episode talking about the ping changes that have been really hot topic in the community, but we're going to start off with some motivation. So we will get to that just for those people that are like, you know, Curtis and Nathan, come on, you guys are going to talk about this. Because there's been lots of riot changes that have been discussed. People saying, you know, big things about the potential future of the game. So we'll get into that later. But I wanted to surprise Curtis with this one here. So this was actually sent to us. This
okay.
To our Broken My Concept email, but I thought this was too good for us to just, we got to start this.
I haven't seen this. I don't know what
we're looking at. Based on our motivational BBC arc. So this was from someone by the name of Sorest. And the title of this email was, "The Process Got Me to Challenger." And there's a motivational video. And just a little quick caption here. "Hey Curtis and Nathan, I've listened to all episodes. Big fan. I started playing in Season 2 and have since then ended majority of my seasons high diamond on EUS. We'll look at his OPGG, but he literally, like Season 3, diamond, Season 4, diamond, 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 diamond.
Wow.
Just plays every year, diamond. Just straight up, like you'd say, genuine zero progress for like 8 years, right? 2 years ago, I started one trick in, and while listening to the podcast, you guys inspired me to follow the process. As a result, a month ago, I hit Challenger for the first time on EUS. I recorded some of my review sessions and compiled some sort of dramatic motivational video of me trusting the process. I thought I'd share it with you." He says, "Keep up the good work and trust the process." So what we'll do, Curtis, is we will watch this all the way through without saying anything. There's lots of things that you're going to grab from it, Curtis, okay, but I have notes here that we can go back on, okay? Because we can't, this is, it's really good. I watched this like 3 times.
All
right. I couldn't stop it. We can't stop it. It's like disrespectful to stop it, you know?
Okay.
All right. So here we go. This is some more BBC Reacts, some motivational podcast content for you guys.
I think, like, I truly believe that if I keep doing this and I keep sticking to this process, because what's happening is I learned a shit ton from this. There's so much learning from every game. So if you just slow down a bit, grab the learning from every game and just like take your time to get into the replay, get into the details. I think in the long term, I just keep doing this. Like imagine me being on like block 15 here and I've like thoroughly reviewed, had this review process.
If you believe there's something there, you commit yourself to an act of service. You commit yourself to the regime, the exercise. If you stick with it consistently, I'm not exactly sure what day, but I know you'll start getting into shape. I know it.
Same champion, same role, and I do this. So I can get really specific with like, I can start to see patterns because I'm not switching up the variables so often. I can be like, oh wait, in this matchup, let's say you switch champions or roles, well, you're not going to bump into that matchup anytime soon. And if you don't review either, well, you're not improving. Like, I improve so much now. I bump into Aurelia, like, I will know what the hell I should do because I just play the Aurelia matchup. Like, I get to practice it deliberately over and over again. Deliberate practice.
What makes chess masters special is that they have seen lots and lots of chess games. And over that time, their brains have learned patterns, many repetitions, timely feedback, and thousands of hours of deliberate practice.
Are we just supposed to live our lives like this the whole time? You know, versus just staying like this and understanding that it's really just a journey of evolution every day. It's just constant improvement, constant curiosity, constantly getting better. The results don't really matter. It's the figuring out that matters.
Okay, let's review block 3 and block 4. Let's review block 5. Let's do a review of block 7. Okay, let's review block 20. Okay, we're gonna do B28. I was muted. Okay, let's review block 31. Let's review block 33. Review block 34. I'm going to do a mega review of block 35 to 38. And let's go into block 40 now. Let's review block 42. Review block 43 and 44. Okay, let's review block 45. I'm gonna review block 47 and 40. Right, so I'm gonna review block 49 and 50. Back at it again. We're gonna do a review of block 51 from yesterday. Absolutely miserable block. Let's review block number 50 to review a bunch here. Block 56. Okay, let's review the most recent block. Let's review some old blocks. Okay, let's review block 69. Hello. Okay, I'm going to review.
Dreams without goals remain dreams.
If you stick with it consistently, I'm not exactly sure what day, but I know you'll start getting into shape. I know it.
Hey, Challenger. We made it. It's surreal, given that it's been a goal for such a long time, for so many years now. And it means more than just a rank to me. It kind of shows that if I put my mind to something, I can get there. I had a full trust in the process, reviewing, taking away learning consistently, knowing that it would accumulate and compound into something in the long term. Just chipping away at the mistakes and peace, dropping the ego, the expectations, taking responsibility, focusing on the signal, what I can control, and just blocking out the noise. What I can't control, the garbage, the distractions, the tilt lords trying to drag you down into their fucking misery. I stick to my one trick, understanding that there's value in keeping variables constant and building intuition, not just switching champions and pissing away all the muscle memory that you have built, the matchups, everything. Yeah, we got there in the end.
Trust the process. So, wow. Every episode Curtis has watched of the Rogue My Concept podcast.
That's just insane.
How cool is that? So, you know my favorite part about that video? Go back and so I'll have this linked in the description to go to this guy's. He actually makes YouTube videos and educational content and stuff now, which is really cool.
Oh, wow.
Watch on the bottom right of his screen when he's going through, like, this is okay, reviewing block 4, block 10, block 30, the date, like, it's just always changing. Like, you know, it's just like bam, just throughout the year, it's just every single day, you know, he's just like reviewing and just sticking with the process. That's the coolest part of this for me. So we'll go over some key points. You probably have lots to talk about from that one, some things, and you probably don't remember some things, so this might rejig it. The first one was the first thing that he said that stuck out to me was there's so much learning from every game, talking about slowing it down and taking your time. that's such an exciting thing, I think. So realizing that there's so much, like if you're not sure, if you're tilted from the game, he understands that there's so much learning from every game. I mean, you actually saw his notes. Like I didn't exactly read them, but he was going really in depth in matchup and stuff like, so he was going really in depth there. So I really liked about, you know, because you know, a lot of people like can, you know, come to reviews and stuff like that. And, you know, obviously there's an element of, you know, you're not aware, you know, you don't know what you don't know, right? But as long as you've got that statement that there is so much to learn from this game, then that's when it triggers the curiosity. It's like, okay, there's problem solved. I don't know. There must be something I'm missing here.
Yeah. Yeah, this is, I mean, there is so much here. I think that you're spot on that he's got this. He definitely understood what it meant to get into the details and truly juice the value from each and every game. What I love about this is that I've actually been reading the book 1984 recently, and it talks about the whole, the term doublethink, where you can kind of actually, you know, and again, shout out Charlie for the book recommendation, how I'm going to butcher it, but essentially you can think two contradictory things at the same time and believe in kind of both of them. And in a way, what he's done, and he's, you can tell that he's understood beautifully the importance of getting into the details, but he's also understood the significance of getting in repetitions and building intuition. That's the biggest thing that stood out to me, because when I see people take sophisticated notes, when I see people become very obsessed about the details, it's very easy to get lost in the details. It's easy to get lost in, like, lose context of where you're at in your journey. But you can tell he was drawing inspiration from many areas, and you got Kobe, and you had Simon Sinek, and you had all these people here.
Denzel Washington.
It seemed to me he had a way of recalibrating everything and making sure that he wasn't getting lost. He had the big picture goals and he was thinking big picture, but he was also getting into the nitty gritty and that whole double thing. And I think he's absolutely nailed that zooming in, zooming out. And I think that's very, very hard to do. And I think that's a testament to how good his process was. And just, he sounds like a very switched on individual who really wanted it. He really, really wanted it in a way. And I wanted to also, just the thing that really jumped out to me anyway was Kobe Bryant, man. Kobe is...
Dude, look at this quote. I want to repeat one of the quotes from the video that he put in the edit. Yeah. Right? This is Kobe Bryant. Yeah. Kobe Bryant. Think about Kobe Bryant. A killer competitor. This is what he said. The results don't really matter. It's the figuring out that matters. Just think about that.
But he used the word curiosity.
Yeah, he used the word curiosity as well. Yeah.
He's like, all that matters is like curiosity.
Yeah.
He, what the fuck?
Guys, look at this sentence. Results don't really matter.
from like this insane,
the most competitive,
really ultra competitive.
I mean, if you were to ask him, do you want to win? Of course, fuck yeah, he wants to win. But he understands that he's got to figure it out. Otherwise, there's no winning.
There's no winning. And then this, again, it ties into this really... is what makes competitive sports so difficult, is that you need to have the will to win. You need to be competitive. You need to be detailed oriented, but you need to simultaneously, you know, want to win, but not want it so much
where the expectations,
that the expectations are going to fuck you up. You got to be process oriented, but then you also, and you got to have a goal, but you can't be too attached to the goal. You know, you got to zoom in, zoom out. You got to have this context of where you're at in your journey. And I think Kobe Bryant had that will to win, that competitive fire, but then that emotional control and that foresight to understand that it all just does come back to that process. And the word curiosity, I think, is so crucial there. It's like, is that what if, like, what if there is a better way to do that? What if I'm not doing the thing that's the most important? Like, curiosity goes both ways, right? It's a curiosity in the sense that, like, what if I'm missing things in the review? What if I'm overlooking details? But what if I'm getting too detailed oriented? What if I'm missing the big picture? That is curiosity to me. It's both.
You can do be better with that. It encapsulates so much.
It encapsulates so much.
That's why it's like the perfect word.
It is the perfect word. Yeah. It really is. It really is the perfect word.
Another, we've actually did a whole podcast episode. I don't know if he got it from, I mean, assume he's watched all the podcast episode. Remember that one that we did with Veritasium about the what makes an expert? I wanted to revisit that in my own coaching as well. And really thanks to Soros for bringing this up.
Yeah.
The really four things interview. It takes to be an expert. And it's a valid environment, many repetitions, timely feedback, and deliberate practice. And we did an episode on this. I don't know what episode, I have to find it. But yeah, that is, again, he's done all four of those things together. You know, he's created... the perfect way for him to become an expert at, you know, his champion.
His specific champion.
His Awaza
he simplified the variables by becoming a one trick. Now that has trade-offs, right? It does have trade-offs because you've simplified the amount of variables, but then you've increased the difficulty of the variables, if that makes sense, right? Mm. Because being an OTB, you're going to put yourself in many, many uncomfortable and borderline even unwinnable positions, right? But at the same time, you can clearly differentiate. It's like, oh, okay, I know that this game is going to be extremely difficult. I've been in this extremely difficult situation before. This is something you're an expert at with your Rek'Sai. You've played Rek'Sai in so many games, so many types of games. You already know straight away heading in, okay, this game's going to be fucking really hard. I've got to bust my balls. I can't make a single mistake. Mm. This game, okay, I could probably die, but I can still win via doing this. Like, you've been in so many scenarios. You know, that's the benefit of, I guess, picking your champion in
every single game.
Every single game, no matter what.
The benefit of that as well is you learn how to lose really well as well. Because, like, you know, these games that are so hard, it's like, okay, well, that's just going to be a loss. I'm not going to put too much effort. Because what I find a lot of people do is they try and find solutions to win every game. And that's what screws. That's where you go everywhere.
Yeah.
Different champions going to win me this game. This is what I need to focus on. This is my weakness.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Doubling down on your strengths. Learning to lose is such a huge aspect of League. Because at the end of the day, looking at his OPGG again, we'll do a review after this, but he only had a 55% win rate to get the challenge. Like, guys, he's losing 45% of his games, you know? You got to learn to lose.
I think that's a really good point. That's a massively underrated aspect of champion mastery. It's not just about knowing what makes a winning situation. It's about what makes a losing situation.
You know what it looks like to lose games.
Yeah. And you're not confused why. No. And that's actually going to... That allows you to be so much more efficient with your energy.
Yes.
Right? You just know exactly where to direct your attention. It's like, well, I'm not going to overemphasize my mid to late game here when we're in this scenario, you know? And that could free up so much energy to just play another game or not get bogged down in the details and just save your, you know, your mental, whatever it might be. That's like a huge part of climbing.
That's
not getting derailed.
Soros used the word again from our podcast that we talked about, the noise versus signal, and he lays it in on the signals,
the signal,
rather than all that noise, all the bullshit that he was talking about, because there's so much out there.
It's very difficult without having champ mastery, for sure.
Another couple of things that I had here in my notes was, I mean, he obviously clearly thought long-term. One of my favorite lines at the beginning was he put out the question, imagine if I did the 3-game block process, the review in every game for 50 blocks. What would that look like?
Mm.
Just a really cool thought experiment, you know? It's like, what happens if I would go to the gym every single day for 45 minutes in 6 months? What would that look like? It's just a really cool question, you know? You laughed at the absolutely miserable block. Just going, I love the reality of that. It's not all sunshine and rainbows, guys. It's brutal. It's absolutely brutal. And I love that he put that in there. Like, this is not sunshine. Again, it's just
real
fun. It's real. I wanted to explore the top. He said reviewing some old blocks, which was interesting. So he clearly had everything recorded because he made the edit there. So he recorded everything for the whole 6 months or whatever it was.
Well, it seems like his process was interesting. I couldn't tell if his process was reviewing after the games, like reviewing after the games, or reviewing before the next block.
I'm not sure.
I don't really know what his process was, but there is something to be said about looking objectively after you've played all the games about what happened.
Oh, when I say old block, I'm talking about he went back to like block
30 right, from 60. Right.
Like he went back 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Isn't that be cool to
look through? I don't think I've really done that. I can't say I've done that.
Yeah, I'll be so interested to look at what was going on, you know, a month ago.
Mm.
What was my problem?
Yeah. Yeah. I can't comment on that. Yeah. I've never done that.
So I thought that was really good, interesting as well.
Could be a new unexplored technique to get perspective.
And one of my favorite lines, another one, was he said that the rank itself wasn't all that important to him. It's the fact that he was able to, he said, shows that if I put my mind to something, I can get there. And that's the lesson that we want from this podcast in the game, right? Like, sure, you can flaunt the challenge, but the fact that he's been able to be human, put all your energy and focus into a goal, take the steps to achieve it, have the setbacks, have the struggles, and then achieve that. That just like unlocks something in you, you know? Like, it's just so good for him that he's got, again, it can be applied to anything. It's not just League, you know? So that's why we love League, for this exact scenario. Stories like this.
he can apply that mindset to whatever he, you know, whatever endeavor he chooses to do, right? Whether he chooses to study some incredibly difficult thing in college, or whether he wants to pursue a particular job or a career path or another sport or another hobby, whatever he chooses to do, he knows that, okay, I just got to figure out what the process looks like. I've got to dedicate my life to it. I've got to, you know, put a lot of time and effort into it. I've got to find how I want to do it and then commit. And commit and commit and commit. And I think that that's a, yeah, that's really the crux of what the BBC is all about, developing that growth mindset. Inspirational, man. I think this is probably one of the most inspirational things we've ever done on the podcast.
I agree. And that's why we just up it. So now, Curtis, because we did the last motivational episode, now this is another motivational episode. We're going to even top it next week. More motivation. So let's go over and look at here. Let's do an OPGG review, because I have a really good topic from this.
Okay.
That we can explore here. So it was a month ago that he made that video, that edit. So he's currently Grandmaster 700 LP. And so for people, for context, he was a Vane top one trick.
Wow.
Vane top. And we're talking literally 433 games.
Oh, wow.
And then Cassiopeia 21 here. So, looking at his season tier, again, season 3, diamond, season 4, diamond, 3, diamond 2, season 6. So he didn't start getting master till season 9, and then he went downwards to diamond 3 in season 20, and then diamond, so he even went to master, then went backwards again. Think about what you could easily say. It's just like, what am I doing? You know, it's like, I'm just a diamond player, like, I'll never get challenger. You could easily say, after 10 years of having a crack of trying to get challenger. And then this year, you know,
we talked about that with the Goggins thing, like all that stuff's going to come up, all the questions, you know, that you got to have answers for those. What are you doing? You've tried for this long. Give up. Mm. What are you doing? Mm. Imagine all the tough questions that he would have had to deal with going through that journey. Like, what the fuck? I'm just listening to two Australian dudes on the other side of the world. Like, what the hell do they know? Yeah. They've never climbed with Vane Top. What the hell will they know?
Yeah.
You know, there would be so many things going in mentally.
Even season 12 here, last year he ended 670 LP Grandmaster. He was relatively, I think Challenger EUS was probably 1,000 at that point, so it was pretty far away. And then he went backwards again at the beginning of this year. So, you know, this is what journeys look like, guys. It's an absolute mess. Now, the topic here, Curtis, the topic here is that people will discredit Mr. Soros here.
Mm-hmm.
They will say, well, he's not really a true Challenger top laner. Mm. You know, he's Vane top. It looks like he goes, you know, Triforce, Hellbreaker, that sort of stuff. And, you know, they'll be like, you know, I'm sure even in games, like, people are flaming, and it's like, you know, what's this Vane one trick? You're not actually good at the game and stuff. Again, that's not the point. This journey is a private journey to him, right? And again, his laser focus, going to the details with Vane, he can now apply his learning with Vane. He can now, the world's his oyster now for League, and now so he can potentially learn as other champions. Maybe even wants to double down with Vane even more and be like, how can I push this even further, right? But this is where we talk about how everyone's journeys, it's their own. It's very personal. It's very private. Don't care what people have to say about, you know, if this guy's actually a good or bad player. It's like, you know, this guy's not a pro player in the day. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, the question is so futile. Like the whole, is he a good or bad player?
It's comical, yeah.
It's comical. It's like, you know, whether this guy is a, you know, let's say how good he is relative to, you know, some bin or something, you know, like what's
or
it matter?
On his surf, like Broken Blade or something.
Or Broken
like
Blade. What's who gives a shit? You know, who actually cares? It's like you. Oh yeah, I told you, and he's not that good. Okay, yeah, he's not a pro player. Okay, you know, it takes nothing away from what he's achieved. You know, at the end of the day, if you're not, you know, becoming a pro player, then there doesn't even need to be any semblance of comparison, because he's not trying to win a championship or anything like that. So at the end of the day, I love what you said. Everyone's journey is inherently a personal journey, and it's addictive. And it's addictive to compare yourself to others. It's addictive to be like, oh yeah, but I got that rank with that amount of win rate, or I did it on that champion. We did on the TikTok episode. There was one of those TikToks, you know, the guy raging at like, oh, I got my, I won this game, or I lost this game. I was playing a mechanically demanding champion. I lost to someone playing Rammus and just pressing W. That doesn't make that person any lesser because they're playing a more mechanically simple champion. Mm. it's like comparing sticks with stones. They developed a differing skill set playing that champion. And again, there are so many things at play here, past gaming experience, whatever. We know nothing about this guy's real life situation. He could be studying, working a full a job, having a partner. Maybe he has a bloody kid. We have no idea what this guy's situation is. So we can look at someone's rank on the surface, but we have no idea what the fuck they're dealing with.
It could be harder for others than it is, you know.
That's what I'm saying. It's not like we're all on a level playing field. We don't all have the same gaming experience. We don't all have the same real life situation. We have no idea. We have no right to actually compare anyway. You're not even comparing with the full story anyway, even if you were going to try and compare. So it's just, it's just a futile thing. And it's just, it's inevitably going to happen. People are going to discredit him and put him down. You know, hate never comes from above, right? It always comes from below. So just keep that in mind, man. And yeah, so thank you for sharing this story. I think it's an absolutely amazing story. And for me, the thing that I kind of want to segue from this, which is a beautiful segue, is the whole, I've been obsessed with this kind of concept is like the main quest and side quests. And so I've been playing Baldur's Gate on PlayStation.
Oh, really?
And you have like, there's like the main quest. And like, there's like in every game, right? Yeah. There's like the main quest and you can finish the game like as fast as you really want to. But then there's like all these side quests, right? In League, kind of tying this back to League, I feel like there are the way I view main quests is like you're ticking the big shit off ASAP. Right? Like the big 20%ers, right? We have these main quests. And then I feel like it's so easy to get tunneled in or sidetracked on side quests in League, like really refining a particular thing that may not mean something in the grand scheme, may not give you the most results, but maybe you just want to perfect it. It's like, I just really want to perfect my micro. Or I want to get better at it. I want to get better at like, you know, some element of your play. And what happens, and I think this was, I've said this with many people, it happened with myself as well. You get caught up and you don't even realize if you're doing the side quest or the main quest. You feel like the side quest becomes the main quest. You don't realize that you've actually lost complete perspective over what's really important in terms of getting results in your journey.
Because you're so focused on how do I achieve this side quest that you lose perspective.
Yeah, that's right. It's like you, because what happens when you're focusing on something, right? That becomes the thing that jumps out of you in the review, right? So if you're really paying attention, let's say for example, I'm playing Syndra. I could go infinitely deep on the way I'm using my abilities. I could, and if I'm really obsessed about getting a better with my E usage or my Q usage or my W usage, whatever. That's going to be what jumps out of me in the review. I'm going to be, that was a disgusting E, that was a disgusting Q, that was a disgusting W. I could like, that's the thing that I'm going to be looking for because I'm filtering for that. That's the thing that I am thinking about, I'm focusing on. When you do that for long enough, that becomes, in your mind, the main quest.
Main quest, yeah.
Right? It's like, in your mind, the main quest. And now you've forgotten everything else that is really, really important. I could actually maybe not focus on this and actually look at, okay, wait, I didn't play this fight well, but I missed my abilities, but why the fuck am I here in the first place?
That's the side quest versus the main
quest. You know what I mean? That's the side quest versus the main
quest. What am I fighting over?
What am I fighting over here? You know, I could have played this better, but then what happens where it gets even trickier is that the ego comes in, right? Where it's like, oh, but I just want to perfect this. Oh, it's disgusting. Like the elitist mentality, leader, right? Yeah. It's like, I got to get better at this. Yeah. But in the grand scheme of things, it means nothing. Mm. And it's very addictive, depending on the champion you play. And
you can also side quest it as well. I see the side quest of macro, then just not getting into the details enough of the micro.
That's right. Yeah, 100%. Or like, you know, translating leads and you're directing all of your attention on like macro and what to do with leads. But then what happens when you don't have a lead, which is, you know, well, you're looking at your mid game when your early game is terrible. My point being is that it is important to do these side quests every now and then. You need to go down these rabbit holes, even if it's not temporarily going to give you LP, but you need to come back. You need to revisit the core shit. It's like, okay, I'm going to look at all these little things here and these are nice. I'm going to brush up maybe on my itemization or whatever the hell it might be. But you need to bring it back to the big shit that is really going to give you results. And I realized for myself what that big thing for me and something I've noticed a lot within my clients is not bringing it back to just reference points of the champion. Like, what is your job in the game?
I love that word, reference points.
I love that. And that's really what the foundation of League really is.
Yes.
Now, this ties into, I wanted to share one of the biggest coaching breakthroughs that I've had in a long, long time.
All right, Curtis hasn't even shared this one with me.
Made a video on the MLA about this already. So people, if you're in the MLA, you've probably already heard of this. So
exclusive access.
Exclusive access there. But
to the way Curtis' brain works.
So essentially, the question I hear all the time, not only within the MLA, but just in the community at large is, why does it feel like I need to play perfectly to win? Right? That's a very common question.
Because why does the enemy make so many mistakes and they're winning the game?
Yes. Well,
how does that make sense?
How does that make sense? Yeah. That is of such a... This is like the time-old thing of league.
Yeah.
Right? And it's, and I've always had answers, rough answers to it. Like, oh, you know, focus on what you control. You're going to get bad games. You're going to get good games. Yep. Right? Could be a 30%er. They could just get lucky. You don't see how they play in, you know, other games, whatever. There's all these things. And they're all valid.
Mm.
And they all make sense. And they're all, you know, I'm not disputing any of those. But what I've realized is where that actual feeling comes from, it's a sign that you're not playing in accordance to your champion or identity, and you're not clear on your role and job in the game. So in order to prove this, I've got a model, okay? My model breaks it down like this. In League, there are three overarching... This is, you know, it's a model, it's a generalization, so bear with me. It's not completely perfect, but it's a great way of viewing the climbing. Now, I don't know how this applies to every role. I'm assuming it applies to every role, but it definitely...
test it with jungle.
Brain. When you're going through this, try and think of it from a jungle perspective.
Yep.
The first one is you climb via having a lot of champion mastery and being good mechanically. So you may not be the smartest player about the macro and win conditions and all that, but you're very good at fighting with your champion. You know exactly when you're strong. You know when you're weak. You know what you... what like. You know, what makes a good game for your champion, a bad game for your champion. You just, you skirmish well, you trade well, you do all that. You're just mechanically very good with your champion. And there are a lot of players like this. We hear this all the time when people say, Curtis, there's this streamer that plays, you know, and he just autopilots and he just, you know, plays with he has a shit ton of champ mastery and he just dominates everyone. He's not using lol states. He's not shot calling this. He's not thinking about the next objective. He's just mechanics maxing and killing shit. And there are many players like that. And that is a viable way to climb in League of Legends. You can't dispute that. There are many players who climb like that. So that's like the first, like, kind of, I guess, rung, right? The second one is people that are very smart at the game. They developed a lot of intuition over many, many, many years of playing. This is typically found with long-term OG players where they've played many champs over a long period of time, or they've played the game for a long time, such that they've got so much knowledge about the game. Like, they know win conditions, like, intuitively. They know like what their job might be in a composition. They can even, like, Tyler 1 is a great example of this, where he can play many champions and win, not because he's like insane mechanically or insane with his champ mastery, but he's just smart. Good game sense. Yeah. Like, he's smart with the game. So that's kind of the second rung of players. And then the third one is the combination of both. This is the Agurans. They got great champ mastery. They're incredibly good at skirmishing. They micros down pat. They know when they're strong. They know when they're weak. They all have all that stuff. And they're smart, and they think holistically about the game. They think in terms of reference points, win conditions, next objectives, taking control of the game, lane assignments, tempo, boom, boom, boom. So this is the rank one, you know, to be a rank one player, in my opinion, like a proper rank one player, that's like, you need both. And Agurin had both in spades, right? And so every player is kind of fits into one of these three categories. Now, they may not be fully in one of them. These are obviously... You know, no one's going to be 100% in one and zero another, but you know, you can kind of see where I'm coming from. Now, the reason this is very important and ties back to the playing perfectly thing is that what you'll find is that if you're making decisions that aren't aligned with your champion's identity, or you're making decisions that are actually against your win conditions. So I'll use an example. Let's say I'm playing Syndra and I'm Fed. I'm 3-0. I am the win condition. And I put myself in a scenario that was so, like, I did not need to take this fight whatsoever. I didn't need to be there. My team's away from me. But, you know, I outplay my way out of it. I play it flawlessly and I just kill two people and I get my way out of the situation. I had to play that situation perfectly to win that scenario, right?
Mm.
But if I was only making decisions that were in reference to my champ's identity and only putting myself in good situations, I don't necessarily have to play perfectly. There is room for error because the situations I'm putting myself in are actually just good situations. So for people that aren't playing thinking of win conditions or reference points or what is my role in the comp, what they're doing is they're putting themselves in all of these shitty scenarios. Mm. Now, in order to win in shitty scenarios, you do have to play mechanically fucking perfect.
This is so funny because I got a question this week about Gankin, and he was saying my teammates just really, every time I gank, my teammates are just misplaying, right? And exact same thing that I said. If you're doing a gank and it requires your team to mechanically execute perfectly, that means that the gank probably wasn't high percentage.
That's correct.
And then guess what? We look at the game, and then I wasn't even the one responding because this was in my review, channel, and other Soul2 members' comments. Like, the wave's too big. Low mana Xerath. Like, you know, this just so focused on, again, the wrong things.
Yes.
And just looking at, oh, everyone's going to play perfectly. It's like, that's typically not good plays. Like, I had a game where I did a... I played Jarvan. I did a full clear into, I saw my top, I had a Malphite top against a Sylas. And I'll have probably the clip playing up here to show how poorly I executed it. But it worked because I was fighting a gigantic wave and it was a beautiful counter gank from Lee Sin and all that sort of stuff. And I like fail flash EQ'd. I still got a double kill, fully crashed the wave, helped the Malphite. And it was just because I was just ticking all the boxes. It's just a high percentage, beautiful play. And even if I fuck up mechanically execute it, it still works. It's still going to go well for me. It could a bit better sometimes, but it's still going to go pretty damn well.
And that's why you can see high-ranked players who are not maybe mechanically the best.
That's me. That's how I play.
Because they're fundamentally putting themselves in very good, favorable situations.
Mm.
But the opposite applies. There are players that are putting themselves in shitty scenario after shitty scenario, but it's so good mechanically. They play these scenarios perfectly. And I see this. You see this especially with a lot of these high-elo Chinese players. It's like Beifeng and Mangofish. They put them, like I can't make sense of their decision making.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense,
yeah. Like, this is fundamentally makes no sense, but they make it work.
Mm.
So then I feel like, am I gaslighting myself thinking that this is the wrong play? No, they're just, that is the way they climb. That is their skill set.
Mm.
But you get into the Gurren, they take decisions that make sense and they flawlessly execute them. That is the peak of League of Legends. So if you ever find yourself saying that sentence, why does it feel like I have to play perfectly to win? That is a sign that you're not thinking about the game in terms of your job in the comp. You're not thinking about your reference points as your champion. You're not thinking about win conditions. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
If you do those things, this is what we're going to show in the Curtis's Clip Corner later on, a game where I didn't play perfectly, but I just won because I just made decisions that made sense with my win condition. And that's it. That is League of Legends. That is League of Legends. It is about consistently having a hypothesis about what you think you need to do to win, and then go having a crack and then seeing what happens, what works and what doesn't work. And the more we develop that skill over time, just the more sophisticated it becomes and it kind of scales out of control. So that is it. That's my model. And I think it answers that question perfectly. That's my breakthrough.
It's interesting. You probably might see that more for me because I think about maybe extreme examples of, you know, how you say, like, you know, there's not one person 100 or,
right.
You know, like a lot of my clients, I would say very rarely do I see someone is more stacked on the mechanical side. Maybe
like
again,
the jungle role.
You just don't fight as much. But it's basically, I would say most of my clients, like, it's about both. Like,
right.
Like exactly like down on 50-50. Right. Like if you're in your rank, you know, you're probably in that rank, in that perspective rank.
You're saying that it's very
difficult.
You're going
to have balance. You can't do both.
In jungle, it's very difficult to not think about.
You have to have some game sense.
Right.
And you have to have some.
Because you just won't be. It'll just be so hard to be in the right place at the right time, even if you're good mechanically.
Yeah.
I see what you mean.
You know what I mean? So I don't really see that often. Like, the only time that I really see people that are like mechanically higher skill than their level. They just need discipline and probably those like more diamond players or players that have been playing or Ember players that have been playing for a long time. And they just need that discipline of that game sense.
Right.
But that's really it. Like I wouldn't really say that for gold, platinum. It's about, would it just be even. We just got to level the bar up on both of those.
Right. Interesting. Yeah. Makes sense. But at least for mid, that's what I see. You see it all the time. Like people that are like Katarina players.
Katarina players, certain champions just breed those.
That's right. It develops that particular skill set. You're just fighting.
And then you have like champs on the opposite. Like, you know, if you're like a Galio player or something like that. You know,
that's right.
Like, then you have to play the game that way.
Yep.
But a jungler is so interesting because you can always be a carry in a way. Even if you're playing, if you're playing, let's say, a facilitator champion, and you just happen to get all the kills. Like, you're super strong, right? Yeah. You can just kill everyone, you know?
Yeah.
Because you can just gank and get the kills, right? So, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's my kind of, like, observation. And it's made me realize how, you know, it just made me realize again, because I think I was stuck on a side quest about, you know, a lot of stuff about skirmishing and stuff. But I was overemphasizing that, and now I'm kind of on a coaching arc now, bringing it back to like the reference points and like what is your job, and it just surprised me how many people aren't aware of their job in a game. They don't even have a hypothesis about what their job is in a game, and even if that job is even like wrong, it doesn't actually even matter. It's like you have something to work, something to center around. So, you know, obviously going to change over time, but that's kind of where I'm currently at.
It's another coaching breakthrough. That's probably right. How many breakthroughs do you reckon we've done in this podcast? Probably 4 or 5?
Yeah, not many. They come every maybe 6 months or so.
Every 50 episodes?
Yeah.
That's probably about 25, 30 episodes, yeah. I love it. I'm excited for the next one and see how it evolves. All right, we'll move on to Summoner School now, Curtis. We're going pretty good for time here.
Do you want to talk about the ping thing or not?
Oh, God.
We've got to talk about the ping thing.
Jesus, Curtis. I almost forgot about that one.
That's a big one.
Absolutely. So, Riot released this patch this week, and it got a lot of heat around the ping-in. So I'll get specifically what they said here. All right, so they changed the aspect of ping-in of pinging any allied information on the tab scoreboard, the tab screen, and the UI now only displays that information to you in the chat and will be designated by self. This will affect the following pings: allied portrait, alive, and time respawn, allied level, allied ultimate cooldown, allied primary and secondary rune trees, allied summoner spell 1 and 2, and allied item slots 1 to 6, and allied trinket slot. So all those, only you can see them. Now, let's first, Curtis, explore, how do you use those pings? Are they useful to you? Do you use those to help you win League of Legends games?
So does that mean you can't ping can you ping the enemies?
Yes.
Okay. And can you ping dragons?
Yes.
So you can ping dragons and rifts and stuff.
Yep.
But isn't that on when you press tab?
Well, these specific things that they remove from it. Yeah. So it's not everything from tab.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So what do I currently use? Can you give me that list? Can I just see? I do actually use the time until respawn. Sometimes where I'll like, if like, say for example, we're like about to do Baron or something, sometimes, or like an objective, I'll ping that this guy's dead, and I'll ping, and then sometimes I'll also ping TPs.
Yep.
So like if someone's like, I know they have TP coming up soon, or like I want them to TP, I'll like ping their TP to make it clear that I want them to TP to the play or just come to group to the objective. Ultimate cooldown as well. I feel like sometimes, I would say for me personally, not a lot, but I have pinged that before. Mm. Like I'll ping a key cooldown. Summoners. I ping my own. I don't know if that, can you ping your own? You can ping your own, right? Or not? Because I ping my flash all the time.
I'm not sure about your own.
Right. Because I can ping.
Yeah, it will be your own. It's just allies.
Because I ping my flash all the time. Yeah. I don't know. Have I pinged my... No, I don't think I ping my... Because sometimes I will say, wait for like Twitch's flash, like on my own team. Like,
yes. You can't do that anymore.
Maybe you can type it. Because I don't think I ping it often, me personally.
Okay.
Interesting. And then items, I will ping GAs.
Okay.
I will ping GAs. So GA is definitely an important one. Like, for example, if I see like my teammate doesn't have GA or does have GA, I'll like, you know, the timer of it. But that's about it. So, you know, some stuff is important, maybe not some other.
God, that's so interesting to me, Curtis, because I use these to win League of Legends games straight up. Like, allied levels, like,
Yeah, levels, yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. Like, I'll ping. It's like, okay, well, I'm not ganking your lane because you're level 5.
Or something.
Or yeah, or like, yeah, wait for casting, yeah. Like, level 15.
You ping someone's 15 or yep. something, yeah.
Ultimate cooldowns all the time because yeah. I need to know whether I'm giving a drag. I need to communicate to my team why I'm giving this dragon. I'll like ping back off on the dragon and ping Malphite ults and down, and then that, and then I'm pinging on the way to the trading sides of the map. You know, these are some really like high elo things that I'm doing, right? That's a massive one that I use, and then allied portraits and stuff like that. How do I use those?
Do you use the death timers? Do you ping the death timers sometimes?
Yeah, I'll put it. Death timer sometimes. Yeah, it's like we need to... It's like, let's say a Baron contest is happening. I'm like, okay, I'm waiting for this person to come back alive so we can let's go contest this. Like, I'm to contest it. So my honest opinion on this, like, this is... I'm really concerned about this. This is, I think... So we love Riot Games. Yeah, we talk about... We loved a lot of their overall big picture changes this year with ranked and that sort of stuff. Yeah. But I think they've really hit the mark, missed the mark here big time. I'm really concerned with the direction of the competitiveness of the game. With this sort of stuff, like if this is where they're going, because obviously the big reason why they implemented this, guys, is they don't like the toxicity of how it gets abused, of like people like spamming and like okay, you know, spamming the portraits, like, oh, you suck, you know, and that's really their reasoning for that. And I feel like that there's just not, you can just mute someone, you know, like the bad eggs have ruined the competitive nature.
Well, let's play devil's advocate here, right?
Yeah.
Really, we got to remember that Riot care about the majority.
Yes,
right. They care about the majority of the player base. They don't really, like, at the end of the day, Nathan, they don't really care that much about the high elo community. Like, they will make adjustments for the high elo community, but their priority is the overwhelming majority.
Well, that's
right?
What they make. They're business.
That's what they make. They're their business at the end of the day, right? As annoying, you know, as sad as that is, they're a business. Our league needs to make money. So they want to keep as many people as happy as possible. And one of the biggest deterring factors in league at the moment, as we all know, is the toxic aspect, right? Now, we know, right? I always remember that, the quote where it's like, cyberbullying doesn't exist. You can just turn the monitor off.
Yeah.
Even that's a terrible thing to say.
Yeah.
But I don't believe that, but it's like, you can just fucking mute it, you know?
Yeah.
But they want, you know, it's like the whole, you know, keeping people happy, essentially, the majority. And they probably looked at the stats and being like, well, look, we actually see in the overwhelming majority
people spam
of people, they don't actually use the pings.
Yeah.
And that would actually probably be the case. If you actually looked at an average gold or platinum game, they're probably not pinging any
every
of this shit anyway.
Every single game probably is getting spam pinged.
It's probably either spam pinged or not at all. Like, I don't actually see that even in my reviews. People don't ping shit, useful shit in the average, you know, platinum or gold, right? So... I'm just playing devil's advocate. I'm with you. I think this is a terrible change for the game, but I'm just kind of trying to empathize with Riot for a second here.
Yeah. So you know how we talk about moving away from versus towards? I feel like Riot could be maybe doing a better job to, like, you know, this is the way we want to be using pings, you know, like
show it used properly
rather than just delete. It's like, we're moving away from this. Like, we're just it's like short-term band-aid solutions and, like, you know, not making, helping, how do we make the competitive player base more competitive? That's what we're trying to do with the podcast. We're trying to make the player base more competitive by making them aware of their mistakes.
How to use pings properly series or something.
Yeah. Stuff like that, you know? I mean,
putting it on the client.
You know, that probably, you know, it might not make that much of a dent. But again, like, maybe there's other things. I had someone have a suggestion where you can only, if only like you're on a level 4 and above, you can like ping and stuff like that. Utilize the honor system, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe Riot don't use that enough, the honor system.
Yeah, the honor system would be great. Also, like, maybe if you've been restricted in the past, maybe you don't even need to be honest. Like, you just don't need to have a negative.
Yes.
Like, you can be neutral or positive and you get access to using pings. If you're negative, right, you have to earn back your right to use pings.
Pings, yeah.
Which is kind of the direction that we're going in with those changes around, you know, having to play ARAMs and normal games to earn your right to play ranked. I like that direction because ranked should be a privilege. You know, so using pings in a ranked atmosphere should be a privilege as well. I think that's the way they should view it. I like that suggestion. So, like, maybe if you've been chat restricted, you've been had one of those flagged, like your account's flagged because you had to play 5 normal games or whatever before you play ranked, then okay, we restrict your usage of pings for now the next 10 games or 5 games or whatever. Boom, rinse, repeat. And then the warning gets more and more severe. Then if that happens again, then, you know, you can't use pings for now the next 50 games. And, like, it should be a progressive type thing. Because then you will learn, oh, shit, God damn it, I wish I could have pinged here.
The problem with that, though, is like, you know, you could say then the competitiveness, like this person's getting, this teammate's getting punished for this. They might be like on the way to rehab, but like it's like sort of ruining the competitive integrity of that specific game. Like, you see what I'm saying here? Like, then not everyone has the exact same tools to win a game, you know, in a certain time.
Right, I see what you mean.
So that again, like if we talk about competitive integrity, then that sort of limits that a bit.
Yeah, it does.
Because
like,
everyone's not on the plane. Because that's the beauty
that's
thing
the
about
the beauty league. Yeah.
Everyone's on a level playing field. Everyone's exact same access to the tools.
But couldn't you say the same thing about chat restrictions?
Chat restriction. Yeah, I mean, you could, again. But I think that pinging is, I think, the, I mean, such an important aspect of my game, at least.
Right,
or
yeah.
In High Elo, you know? Like, people talk about voice comms and typing and stuff like that. Pings are a very effective way of communicating.
Mm.
I would say more than voice comms in a lot of situations.
I totally agree. Yeah, it's a good point, actually. You definitely don't want to touch the integrity of the game, the competitive integrity.
Yeah. And then it comes into the conversation. Now this is put on the conversation. If you're removing this, why don't you add voice comms? And I'm so against adding voice comms. Adding voice comms will ruin the game because
people can't even handle using pings.
Pings, yeah.
Let alone, because voice comms are so much even, it's even easier to just lash out at someone.
I'm not even talking about that aspect. No, people will say that people are going to lash out less. The big aspect I don't think is because no one knows what they're doing. Everyone's just making everyone else worse. Like, imagine that. Like, that voice comms, people don't understand. That will be the
death
end
of ranked. No, what will happen is that the advantage will come from not using it, from muting it.
Yeah.
Like, your advantage in league.
Yeah.
But then the competitive integrity is like
not
someone teams.
The same tools.
Yeah. The worst thing, it's the worst for Master Plus because Master Plus is all these, well, let's say GM Plus, there's all these like cliques. Was that the word cliques?
Yeah.
There's like these groups of people that like are friends with each other and you're either in that crowd or you're outside that crowd, right? And if you're the person that's outside that crowd and you're versus maybe a team that is, they've got many people that are in that crowd, they actually might be able to use comms in a somewhat effective way.
Yeah, you can't use it.
They have an advantage over the team that maybe don't get along. Yeah. Like, I feel like there's too much risk, especially in the higher elo brackets, of that happening.
High elo brackets has its own issues with voice comms and then low elo brackets as well. Because the most obvious one is like, gank my lane. It's just the worst gank. It doesn't make sense. They don't understand the jungler's perspective.
I think if they did that, if they added voice comms, I will start a protest.
We'll start
a movement.
Yes.
Like, we'll try everything we possibly can.
That is what I'll be very passionate about.
Yeah, I'll be extremely passionate about that. It's like huge. Fingers crossed, please. I might even start making tweets now, like just to get the message out there into the ecosystem, like
which one?
About just really pushing down the voice of not like pushing down the whole not
voice gone.
Voice gone. Like,
oh, I mean, you're
spreading the message.
You're gonna get that's not a popular opinion. That's Pitchforks will come after you with that one, Curtis. Even high elo players don't understand the impact of what that is. Because everyone plays on competitive teams and stuff. They don't realize that. You know, I always say, like, when I hear people playing competitive teams, most of the time you're getting worse at the game.
Right, yeah, because that's a controversial thing.
They don't understand.
They don't understand that.
Because they haven't played at the highest level in the competition. They don't,
it's so hard.
So your pitchforks will come after you, Curtis.
Fuck, people got to use their brains, dude.
Well, we would have to educate. It'll take a long time to educate you. Then what we'll do, we'd have to show all these examples of voice comms.
We'd have to do like a nice case study type thing of how voice comms ruining the competitive integrity of the game.
And we'd have to do, I reckon we'll do an episode. We'd have to do a separate whole episode a week. Like, we'd have to get really, really.
Oh, we'll tack it aggressively for sure.
So yeah, so overall, you know, we don't get to that voice comm stage yet, but that obviously this brings up the conversation for it. But yeah, I'm definitely not happy with these allied things. I mean, that hurts my gameplay quite a bit for sure, because I use these very effectively in my games to communicate stuff. So I guess we'll see how it plays. I mean, these changes are in the game right now. So, you know, usually when we talk about these changes, like, up and coming, cool.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, this is it now.
Sure.
So I don't know how they're going to monitor this. I don't know if they're going to revert it. If they revert it, what would that look like from Riot's perspective? You know, people be like, are you encouraging toxicity? From a PR perspective, I'm also really concerned about, you know, how to right reverse this change if they were to.
Yeah, they look very bad either way.
So it's, yeah. It's, God, it's a risky one. Can't believe they did change. That. I'm really shocked. This one has shocked me. All right, let's move on to summoner school now, Curtis.
Okay.
Today's post. This is from summoner school, obviously. 27 days ago, this was 113 upvotes, 87 comments. The title of this one is, how do you play your non-scaling champion well? A question was recently asked about scaling champions and how one defines them. That got me thinking, can you elaborate on a champion that you play that does not scale? What are the strategies that you employ to mitigate the non-scaling? What team comps do you avoid? Are there items you purchase that help you? What are the benefits of play the non-scaling champion that you play? Thanks. All right, Curtis, what are some initial thoughts here? Do you really play many non-scaling champions, Curtis?
Well, the first thing, scaling is a very misunderstood concept.
It's a buzzword in the community, isn't it?
Because, okay, let's really get specific why, okay? The first thing you got to understand is that champions that, okay, when we think of scaling, we automatically assume that it's like we think of this situation in a vacuum where it's like they have three items, I have three items, and then we just butt our heads against
each
other.
Plays everything perfectly.
And then they just do more damage because they have better scaling.
Everyone's in vision. There's no fog of war.
Right. Right. That's the way we think of it. That's the way our brains like to think of it, right? But that's not the reality of League, right? So that's the first thing. The second thing is that if you get a lead, League is an inherently snowball-oriented game. So the power of playing champions that spike earlier in the game is that you can shut them down.
You can keep snowballing.
You can keep snowballing. Mm. You get more resources because you get access to more waves or more jungle camps, more tower plates, more neutral objectives, and you actually reduce their farm a lot of the time and reduce their resources by either taking their jungle camps, denying them resources, sending them back to base, taking, you know, they're going to miss minions, miss creeps, whatever. So you're actually, it's not just like, oh, I'm getting more. It's like they're getting less. It's a combination of both. So that's one of the powers of playing, you know.
And there's nowhere that they can catch up.
Yeah, a lot of the time. And really the power as well is like, if you get early leads, it's on you to mess up rather than on them to play well, right? Because, you know, you just got to protect your bounty. And a lot of the time, when you're ahead, you're hard as a kill, but then also you have the vision control. You have the control of the map. You should have... It's very hard to get caught off guard. It's a lot harder to get caught off guard. Mm.
So obviously the facts are that, you know, champions like Kassadin, Aurelion Sol, Vlad, they do scale, yes. But like they don't in the same aspects, you know? Like they cannot. They can just be absolutely rendered useless. So I mean, this is a great topic for me because I play purely basically early game junglers. And I view my champion as scaling champion.
Mm.
There was a comment here. For the top comment has 180 upvotes, just absolutely misses the mark. Says, I play Volibear jungle with the tank build a lot. Basically, I'm a god in the early game, but after the 30 minutes, I'm just a bear. I farm almost no camps, just gank lanes all the time and peel for my team. I try to identify who could become fed, partly based on their match history. That person will get the jungle service deluxe. That's just not how you play jungle. If you're playing jungle like that, again, if you're playing Volibear, the spam ganking style, it's so inconsistent, especially if you're not a very experienced player. It's just so funny. He's based on match history, he's going to camp their lane. Like, this is just so just wrong in so many aspects. It's just unbelievable. The view of the game is so distorted.
Yeah, the view of the game is so distorted. It's so wrong. I can't believe that's the top upvoted comment, is it?
Yeah, top up for 180 upvotes, got more than the post. And then one of the comments here says, picking back on this, I'm a Rek'Sai main. All right, I'm also a Rek'Sai main, Mr. Tyrannus. I'll see what people's win rates are. If they're similar, who scales harder? Will Syndra or Garen carry the team? Obviously Syndra, but then their top has Darius. I'll make Darius take a coffee break where even if I can't gank, I can clear his river vision and make him ease off Garen. Now that I've identified that I'm focused in mid, where does my lean go? Do I apply some bot pressure where we have fairly even bot matchup? Do I want to secure dragons and stuff like that? Yeah, sure, that's all general stuff. But dude, you're Rek'Sai, you got to hit your camps and do this stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A great example, again, someone who blew everyone's brain, again, using the Gurren as an example, Jarvan, Elise.
Mm.
So look, someone here says, there aren't that many champions in the game that truly don't scale under any circumstances. Nidalee and Elise are a few junglers. And Gurren was playing in at least like a scaling champion. He was like doing so much damage, just one shot on everyone, in like literally like the 25-30.
Any champ in the game that farms well, scale.
Anyone can scale. If you get a golden experience in gold, you scale.
Yep. You know, I had a review, I think it was this week, where you would think of like Oriana, there was an Oriana versus Silas, right? And you, a lot of people think Oriana, like this is like best scaling, you know, you would think, oh my God, like Oriana is now farming into mid game and like hasn't been set super far behind. Like they're going to outscale the Silas or whatever, or shit like that. And I said, Silas was farming better than the Oriana in this game. And I actually ended the review. I said, it's if Silas farms this well, it's you've already failed. Because champs that shouldn't get access to that much farm who get that much farm become out of control.
They're so scary, yeah.
They're so scary. It's like a Pantheon that gets 10 CS a minute is just one of the scariest champs in the game. Yeah. Or like champs that like typically you wouldn't think should get good farm, that farm that well, they are.
It's like the roaming mid champs, like Talon and stuff like that. The 10 CS for
10 CS
for
Talon is scary.
It's basically unwinnable.
They don't, and I don't really ever view, I view every champ scales. Some champs just scale better.
Yeah.
That's the better way to do it. It's not like one doesn't.
Yeah.
That's a way better way
to box it in. It's like, okay, is again that example there. My champ doesn't scale, so I have to win the game. Like, I have to just spam gank or do some crazy thing. No. Or roam. What's the typical one for the mid game roam?
Yeah.
It was a great example of, you know, the gold case study review that we did. The Akshan.
Yeah. Akshan scales really well.
The game.
Yeah.
He just kept roaming and then he was never strong.
And that's right. You feel like the champ doesn't scale. No. It's a chicken and the egg type scenario where people with Rek'Sai probably don't farm their camps and then it makes the champ feel like it doesn't scale.
Yep. You never full clear.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
That's exactly right. And the community just snowballs.
It snowballs out of control because that's what everyone else is doing.
Yeah.
So that becomes the narrative.
There's no other way to play it.
That's right. And the minority of people that play it in a normal way like you would become the, you know, you're like the outlier.
Mm-hmm. Versus that's just proper League of Legends.
That's proper League of Legends. That's right.
That's good fundamental.
But that's in a kind of weird way the way it should work though, right? Because that's just, you know, you've got the bell curve, right? The overwhelming majority of the people are kind of doing the same thing. And then you're kind of doing something that's actually right and optimal, but you're at the tail end, right, of the bell curve.
Yeah.
Which I guess it kind of makes sense.
It does. Right?
So this is, that's kind of the way I view scaling. It's everyone scales. Just to differing degrees. Yeah. And also, another thing that makes scaling quite complicated is that it also depends on the compositions massively.
Yeah, that's right. Some champs are unplayable.
Some games, Kassadin is very borderline unplayable, like in a lot of games. Like, there's a lot of lockdown. It's just really hard.
Yep.
Or, like, they're their only threat. And, like, you know, a Kassadin, the only one that's fed versus a high CC composition can be very, very hard. Or Vlad. A Vlad can get a really great lead, but then... is outranged massively and they're versing really good self peel and, you know, like Nivea's and Luxes and Zaya's and all this stuff that for Ezreal's and Vlad can't get onto anyone, you know? So it, you know,
certain a game, you can scale well in a game based on the champions.
Yes.
Not even just about the experience and gold and your levels.
That's right. It's just the way your kid interacts with that specific composition.
And one that always springs to mind is Silas versus Malphite. You know, Malphite, everyone's is the ultimate scaling tank. Silas takes his ults. You know, Silas isn't really traditionally viewed as a really good scaling champion. Bam, he's super useful and he's scaling insanely well.
That's right. So there's so many, it's such a nuanced thing. Scaling is an incredibly very, I basically never think of the game in terms of scaling.
No.
Really.
I used to, and that was to my detriment.
Yeah.
That's where I sucked.
Like, it's a factor.
Yeah.
It's just a very minor factor.
That's right.
Like, there's so many things that come before that. It's like, okay, what is my role in the comp? You know, who's doing well? What's the next objective? And then all this stuff, and it's like, oh, okay, but we do scale pretty well or whatever, you know?
Every time when I was a diamond player, this is what I struggle with. I just boxed the games. It's like, okay, I'm against a scaling team. I am, you know, early game. I need to skip the fundamentals to try and win this game. And then I realized, wait, if I keep doing the fundamentals, I actually can win this game by snowballing the game and just taking two or three good fights. That mindset switch was huge for me. Removing this box of scaling versus not scaling.
Yeah, and then the other thing that makes it quite complicated, and this is actually something that's not very well understood, is that there are champions that scale based off particular... So, like, for example, okay, get specific. There are champs like Nefiri, Pantheon, Graves mid is another one where they can spike on one item, their second item doesn't feel good, their third item feels great.
Out of control, yeah.
So there's weird spikes, you know, where they don't necessarily get stronger and stronger and stronger. They might get stronger then weaker then stronger relative to everyone else in the game. Like, Pantheon has this very weird power kind of dynamic. Yeah, where
I don't know. Sometimes
he scales like out of control, game. Like six items.
Yeah, does he really?
Yeah, work? It's crazy. So Pantheon, the way he interacts with items, like with Shoujins and all this stuff, is just out of control. Is why you'll see
cooldown reduction. Is it ability?
Yeah,
haste?
It's like ability haste and all this stuff. And the way it interacts with your kit. So Pantheon, it's like it feels shit if it's like okay at one item, and it feels shitty at like kind of two items. It can feel okay at three items, but the guy, I think it's Spearshot or whatever, says like. Four and then four items, you're like god mode.
Oh, fascinating.
It's so weird. Yeah. And there are champs like that. Nefiri is actually kind of one of them. And there are many others. A lot of AD champions are like that, actually.
Interesting.
So yeah, it's just very complicated. don't worry too much about this stuff.
Yeah, focus on the fundamentals, the basics. Do your job. Champ and your champ, I need to do your job.
All right, you move on to my clips.
Yep, let's go. Curtis.
All right, clips. Let's get into the details, guys. And welcome everyone to Curtis's Clip Corner. All right, so following on from the conversation we had about, you know, feeling like you need to play perfect and like playing in accordance to like win conditions, this was a game I played this week where I know last week I would have lost this game. Ooh, right? Like now, we're in a situation where my bot lane got pumped, right? The bot lane, 4-1 Ezreal on the enemy team. My top lane lost full 5 plates and got annihilated. This is actually Senior Kingpin, the BBC listener.
He's a BBC. He's been into the podcast before.
That's right. I love playing with him. He's a good Singe player. Anyway, so he lost all his whole tower top side. So basically kind of two losing sides in a way, right? Now, I was doing a really good job in the 1v1, but I was having to soak up so much pressure from Nautilus. And just a lot of shit going on, right? So my lead wasn't as big as it could have been. So, but I'm farming pretty well, 120 CS by 1350. Could be better. 2 deaths. So I'm not playing perfectly here. I've got 2 deaths. Now, we've got 1 dragon. Now, in my mind, I've played with Singe so many times. Singe gets out of control in mid-game, and their comp can't deal with Singed. So they've got a Renekton, Fiddle, Katarina, Ezreal, Nautilus. If we can get this Singe to 2-3 items and stall out this game, this Singe can create a lot of space for me to do a lot of damage. And I've won many games from Singe scaling into the mid to late game and getting absolutely out of control.
So what makes it he can good against the comp? Is it because he...
So they don't have an AD carry, in my opinion, that can really...
They have sticking power.
Yeah.
Yeah, is that what you're saying?
They don't have... Well, they don't have anything... Yeah, think about it. They don't have like a crazy mage that can shred them. They don't have an AD carry like a Vayne or something like Kai'Sa that can like really shred them as well. So as long as Singe gets tanky enough to survive the initial onslaught of the burst and create space, we can just destroy them. I can just shred through all those people.
Yep.
So I do a lot of damage into that composition because they're so squishy. And so, because I'm the Orianna, and I've got Phase Rush. So I just felt really confident that if I can stall out this game a little bit, buy time for Singe to scale, that we're just going to win this game. I just felt so confident, even though it makes no sense in the situation. And so I knew that there's a dragon coming up, and Singe even pinged before this on my way. Like team were like looking to contest this dragon. I thought, there's no way we should fight this dragon. Yeah. Ezreal's stronger. Fiddle loves playing around dragons. Yes. This is like the worst case scenario for us. So what I said, I just give. And then you'll see here, I'll play it from here. I just ping give and then ping back. And then we ping on my way topside here in a second. And then we just give that dragon, right? Now, if I fought that dragon, we would get wiped and we would lose the game and would be an FF.
And you would have done that last week.
I would have done that last week because I would have thought, oh, I'm kind of strong. You know, I can mechanics max it. You know, Jarvan's there to create space. Singe has ult. You know, I think to myself, you know, maybe I can play that fight. Just through the lens of just mechanics max, I should win these fights because I'm strong, I've got Leandre's, whatever. But it actually makes no sense. And like, why? It's, we've already got 1 dragon. That's their first dragon.
Why even
go for a risky play like that? It makes no sense.
Especially when you're comfortable winning mid game, late game fights with your comp.
Exactly. That was my perception of like the win condition. And in this game, I didn't play perfectly. I died many other times, but inevitably, like, they just made mistakes. Singe became, like, a huge problem. And I'll show you, like, a classic fight that happens later on where I think Singe just gets absolutely out of control. Where is it? There's, like, one fight here. Yeah, I think this fight here where it exemplified exactly how I thought it would play out. Whoops, let me mute the sound. This is exactly how I thought it would play out. Singe just runs in. They can't kill him. We get... Because Fiddle can't set up with Singe just running at everyone. And then I can just ult the Singe, it just creates chaos. And we just completely annihilate them.
Fascinating.
And so this is a game, and this is what tying back to the thing. I did not play perfectly. And I would have exited this game losing that dragon fight, feeling like, why do I have to play every game perfectly to win?
Yeah.
And I actually know that narrative. I would have had that same narrative. And it's all because I made decisions that wouldn't have made sense with the win condition.
You zoomed out.
I zoomed out and I think, what am I doing? Mm. And when you switch that mindset, you start making better, higher percentage plays, everything, the game just feels easier.
Yes, it does.
Much, much easier.
Yeah. Yeah, I get into these ruts quite often.
So easy to get in this rut.
And when I get, when I get hit challenger at the end of the season, the last two seasons, it's because I exactly thought that way. I again, my gameplay looks pretty sloppy and stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm doing so many things, big picture. I'm saying no to so many things that is allowing me to win the game.
That's right.
You know,
so. And I'm not playing perfectly.
Yeah.
And I know that, but I can still win. And so that's my kind of, you know, tying that all together.
Dude, I just want to just shout out Senor Kingpin here, dude. Like,
yeah, he's a beast.
His, what was it? His weak side.
Yeah, he knows how to weak side perfectly.
Against Renekton.
Or he just gave the tower. Like, he doesn't die and lose the tower. Like, he knows how to just, like, slowly just to stay relevant.
I love it, dude. That's good League of Legends.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Yeah, really good example, Curtis. I think this is great. Again, that this is what it is. You're battling that narrative of it would have looked like you had to play fight perfectly.
And I would have had to play that fight perfectly.
Yeah.
To win this game, yeah. If I said yes to that dragon fight, I would have had to play that perfectly from a threat assessment perspective, from a positioning perspective, from a skill shot perspective. Mm. I would have had to play like Chovy in that fight to win that fight.
And then you ruin the game, and then that's when the narrative kicks.
Yep. Boom.
You fight that fight, you ruin the game, that's when the narrative clicks in, and that's then right. You don't get any learnings from this.
Yep.
Wow. Great clip. All right, mailbag time. Away we go.
Welcome back for Nathan's mailbag. Jingle, jingle, jingle song.
All righty then. Our first question comes from a listener by the name of Deathburst. Probably not his real life name. It's probably his in-game name. Could be wrong. Title of this email is Understanding the Mindset of True Beginners. Just finished listening to your TikTok episode, and with all due respect, I believe you really don't understand how overwhelming this game can be for actual beginners and what's in their mind, and some of the advice you dismissed is actually helpful. I do agree with Curtis' overall conclusion at the end. There is a ton of terrible advice, and you can't expect a beginner to be able to tell the difference, so I won't argue for TikTok as a medium. But I'm writing you to help you guys see how big of a fraction of the player base really live in a different world than you. A bit of context, I started LoL Season 4, took 3 years to reach gold, and have consistently top 30% of the ladder since then. Not high MMR, but better than average, and a veteran of the game. And I have a couple of friends who started playing around Season 10 with varying levels of investment. I've played with them a lot, and I also happen to work in academia. I'm thinking about how to transmit ideas. How to teach is part of my day job. So that's where my opinion comes from. Your understanding of low MMR is low silver, high bronze. But you have to realize there are still 20% of the players below that. 1 in 5. And that's only people who play ranked. On top of that, you have to add all the people who don't touch rank at all and play normals. And all the sub 30 people who literally started the game. There's a huge number of players who play even lower than what you think of as low MMR. For instance, when Curtis dismissed the advice to Just CS and started talking about reference points and power spikes, that's entirely irrelevant for people who don't even think to click their spells half the time. For a sub 30 to low bronze player, telling them to Just CS, even without telling them how, that's good. It's just not about how to do things. It's about building a basic understanding of how the game works. It's telling them this is not a team deathmatch game and you have to build up advantages over time. It's teaching them the value of gold, etc. Another example that you used in the episode was don't click left, right, click back and forth from the great energy guy, or be constantly clicking from the one of the first ones. Sure, for someone in silver, that's useless. For someone who's iron, though, they don't have the understanding of matchup subtleties and skill shot targeting types and all that jazz. But giving them something simple, straightforward, actionable like that, yeah, that will actually help them at their level without overwhelming them. That won't help them become diamond, but a ton of players are viewing LoL as a casual hobby without a competitive mindset. And guess who's watching all those tips on TikTok? Last one for the road, don't play fair. What using bush is not playing fair. Well, guess what? That's something beginners actually said to me. But more generally, this is your learn to say no concept repackaged in a way that is understandable for beginners. It's the idea that just because you have a 3v3 skirmish at second Drake in front of you, you don't have to pick that fight. But it's a fair fight. We're the same number, will say the beginner. Yes, it is a fair fight and you shouldn't play fair. That's the point. It's so obvious to you that you don't realize it, but it's a point that does need to be taught. Cheers, guys. Keep up the good work. Where do you want to start with this, Curtis? So his first point was that we don't realize how many, this another whole section below silver of another fifth of the player base, which is a huge, and maybe that where this podcast and those TikToks, we weren't talking about those players, and that those sort of TikToks were helpful for those type of players.
Well, I do have some what I would call true beginners in my program.
Yep, I have iron players as well.
Iron players and I legit unranked.
And people unranked. Yeah, lots of
in,
unranked.
In my program. And so I'm not going to say I'm an expert in that at all. It's something I'm trying to learn and figure out. I don't really know very well what their problems are. I have a baseline idea, but it's definitely something I need to improve on. In terms of those TikToks, look, I'm going to stand by my statement about the clicking thing. I think it doesn't matter if you go on diagonal, upwards, downwards. It doesn't fucking matter. I don't even think that's advice. I really think it is so negligible. It's actually something that shouldn't even be in the realm of, as a true beginner. It doesn't actually matter how you click. It doesn't matter. So I'm going to push back on that one. I agree maybe with the other two though. I think there was the other two were play fair.
Yep.
I don't know if we even had the same understanding of that one. I mean, maybe I'm just completely wrong. I could be completely wrong here about not using bushes. I didn't know that's a thing. I've never heard that before. Like, have you heard of a true beginner in your program talking about them not knowing fog of war, or like being hesitant to use fog of war because I didn't feel like that was a thing? I mean, look, maybe we're wrong though. I think that does sound reasonable.
That does
sound
reasonable. It does seem reasonable. Is important, yeah, because people think it's
fog of war
binary.
Is such a weird thing, isn't it? It's not exactly
that
intuitive.
That is the X factor in League of Legends. Fog of Vision. War is the, yeah.
Yeah.
Because you're not thinking about what the enemy opponent sees.
It is an interesting way of packaging up. I don't think it's packaged up the best way, but I can see the point that he's trying to make where like...
That would be helpful to...
I could say, yeah.
Yeah, to a beginner.
Like getting that message across that fog of war is a thing.
You can use it
and
to
you should
advantage.
Try to use it.
Yeah.
I think is a very important point. So I would have to agree with that. And the other one was, what was the other one?
The other one was...
Oh, it was about...
Just CS.
Well, yeah. Okay.
Well, the point that you talked about with that one was about there's so much that goes into CS in like
okay,
I mean so, I guess his argument is that people don't understand that you actually need to get
okay
CS,
so let's
really beginner
okay let's get very specific here okay yeah. I would agree with the point that gold is misunderstood for true beginners, like the importance of gold and experience.
Yes,
that is a fact, and I think he's hit the nail on the head there. So I think that is, you know, I think that is a message. There is messaging there that needs to be packaged up better for true beginners to get across that point. Just CS though, I found, just in my experiences coaching and CS, just CS better or focus on CSing, is actually not even helpful. Like not even the slightest amount of helpful in my experience. And the reason I hold that opinion is because it's not actionable. Because what happens is that when someone, they go into lane and they're like, okay, there's a minion there that's getting low. They don't actually even know how to CS. They don't know how to layer minions. They don't know how to look at which minion is dying first and why a minion dies first. They don't understand how minion targeting works. They don't understand how the range creeps do more damage than the melees, and the melees are tankier than the casters. So if you've got three casters attacking one caster, that caster is going to die very fast. But if you've got casters attacking a melee, it's going to die slower. Tanky, yeah. They don't understand that sometimes you have to feel the rhythm of the CS and not hit the CS to feel it out how fast it's dying and then do it. They don't understand that a cannon is worth more than a caster. This is all the specific knowledge that actually is important, but it might be more important because the actionable advice comes from picking one of those things. Even with a true beginner, it's like, okay, all I want you to do is understand that you need to look at which minion is dying first. Great. That is better.
That's actionable.
That's actionable. Just focus on CS, at least in my experience, I can only speak from my experience, doesn't help even in the slightest.
Yeah.
But I think a messaging around, you know, I do think he's right in saying messaging around gold and experience needs to be probably emphasized more. That's not something I'm very great at, but definitely something I need to figure out more.
Yep.
So yeah, like I like where he's thinking. I definitely see it, there's a point, and there probably is a whole world of people out there.
Basic that, tips.
But you know, I'm playing devil's advocate here. These people that aren't ranked and these people that are in iron, in my experience, care a lot less about the game, and they don't actually. You know, and this is a bit of a generalization. I'm just going to stand by what my gut feeling tells me. I don't actually believe many, like to actually go on TikTok or go on a social media platform and actively search for League of Legends tips automatically shows a level of commitment to wanting to get better at the thing.
So you would assume that they have sort of a bit more baseline knowledge.
That's at least in my experience. Again, yeah. You know, the lower the ranks have gone, the less that, in my programs I've seen, the people that are higher ranked just put more effort and more time into the game. The people that are in iron put less time into the game and care less about the game. So, like, by following that logic all the way through, it makes sense to me that someone that is unranked probably isn't going to care as much about improvement at the game. Now, I could be completely fucking off here. That's just my gut feeling. So I think that like a lot of these TikToks don't have an audience, but I don't even know if that audience is even iron or the below. Audience.
Yeah.
I think it is actually the people that have started to get into rank, the bronzes and the silvers and that sort of thing. That's my gut feeling anyway.
When you were viewing those TikToks, that was the audience you had in mind.
It's like beginners that are actually like really...
But he was talking about that we might have a misunderstanding. You think they're not even watching these TikToks?
Yeah, I think they're not even watching these TikToks. Yeah. At least a very minority of them are. Mm. And that doesn't mean there shouldn't be TikToks for those people, but I think the majority of them aren't watching educational content.
Yeah. Yeah, when I...
Nor should they be.
Yeah. So there is definitely... He's right. There's definitely a whole level below even the people in our programs. If you're paying for coaching, you seriously want to improve. So there is another whole level below that.
Yeah, exactly. That
we were not thinking about dressing for those TikTok episodes. Everything was mentioned across, you know, that they have, you know, people that have a baseline on knowledge that, you know, gold and stuff is that.
Yeah.
Because again, if they're searching up, if they're in the algorithm, that means that they're seriously interested in League of Legends.
Yeah, because there's many things that they could be searching otherwise. It already shows a level of commitment to the game.
Mm.
Which I don't think someone that is level 28 who doesn't... They probably don't care too much. So I don't know. Again, it's hard. We're talking in generalizations here, which is very difficult. So, and I don't have the numbers in front of me. So, but I do think there are some valid points there for sure. And that's something me and you, Nathan, have to get better at. We have to hold ourselves accountable to that. That is one of the... This is... You know, part of our journey of expanding to below platinum, below gold, trying to figure out the mindset of this player base. So yep. I would agree with that.
Work in progress. All right, our next email here is from... don't know how to pronounce this name. I guess we'll say Oliveira. Oliveira. Relearning the game. Hi, Curtis and Nathan. Sorry in advance for the long email. I'm a grandmaster mid laner in Wild Rift, which is not much since the ELOs are really inflated over there. Our ranked has a bravery system in which you receive points for every game you play. Once you reach a certain amount of points, you receive a shield that prevents you from a loss. Recently, they increased the amount of points gained by games until Diamond, which made so that you could reach high ELOs even with a negative win rate as long as you played enough games. I feel really frustrated by the direction they are taking the game and really disrespected as a player. So I recently decided to move to PC League, which I thought would not be that hard since the games are basically the same, but I couldn't be more wrong. Adapting to the slower pace of the game hasn't been much of a challenge, if not makes the fundamentals easier to follow since it's less chaotic. But adapting to the mechanical aspects of it has been a demon of itself. I feel like an 80-year-old retired athlete trying to play their sport once again. I know how to approach most situations in the game, but am unable to execute because my slow-ass fingers can't even press the buttons correctly. What would be a good approach to develop muscle memory without creating bad habits? Should I just spam more games, or should I spend more time in practice mode? Is there any exercise which I could practice in particular? Am I just delusional and a really shit-ass player?
There's a lot of self-deprecating language in there.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, as long as you are playing with intent and you're playing with intensity, you won't create bad habits. Bad habits in League are only really created when you're doing something mindlessly without intent for a very long period of time with in low intensity as well, yeah. At least in what I've noticed.
Yeah.
So if you're going out there, you're having a crack, you're having some fun, but you're trying and you're really playing with intention, don't worry. Do not worry. You will break through. Things will start to click. The muscle memory will start to develop. I would not do anything else but play ranked solo queue.
With intent.
And intensity and energy, and just have a crack.
Yeah.
And things will click. It may seem like it's in the distant future, but I promise you, very quickly, things will start to come to you. And you just got to be patient. Got to be very patient and respect the difficulty of the game.
Yep, get the games in. My advice is remember that the game is more anticipation than reaction. While Rift, from my understanding, the abilities are way shorter cooldowns, yeah. And like, even don't they just have different abilities just in general world champs, or do they have the same?
I think the abilities are the same.
They're the exact same.
I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
I mean, when I played it, I played Fizz and stuff, and they were the same abilities.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I mean, it's just going to be feel a different pace and all that sort of stuff, right? So you need to be anticipating certain things. And, you know, it sounds like, you know, the slowing things down, maybe what you need to be doing. I see this a lot, actually, my below, you know, your below platinum, I got below gold pro at my academy, is that a lot of the time I always tell them the advice is slow down the fights first.
Mm.
Slow down your, or rather you miss opportunities and mess up the fight doing it too slow than doing it too fast. Do you talk about that?
That's actually very interesting.
Because people initially, the initial reaction, fight happening, chaos, smash my entire keyboard.
Mm.
That's what I see a lot of the time. I said, slow down your abilities. I need you to do that first, miss lots of kills, and then go to that. Because I feel like that's actually where it builds the bad habits. That's against the known intention. You're just C-play, smash all my buttons, and not thinking about how am I going to use my abilities.
Well, it's interesting. I think this might be one of the differences, potentially, between junglers and midlaners, because midlaners are fighting all the time, so you're using abilities more often on people.
Yeah.
So I can't say I've seen that in my reviews as much. If anything, I've seen from what I usually is them not using abilities at all.
Oh, that would be right. Yeah. They have opportunities in lane too. Yeah, that's right.
They're just missing a lot of opportunities. Yeah. But I do like that as a cue. You know, I think that's an interesting starting point to feel out patience. I do like that. What I noticed mechanically, I like your point where League is a game of anticipation. You know, the mechanical aspect of the game isn't overly difficult once you get the basics down pat. There is like a baseline that you need to reach, and then everything from that point is kind of just like, you're anticipating things. Therefore, you're not really feeling stressed. And so
the big one is just dodging. Like a huge one I see is just clicking close to your character.
I don't actually talk about that at all.
You don't talk about dodging abilities.
I literally don't talk about that at all. Even in my above, I used to be obsessed about that, and I'm on the other side of the spectrum.
Why do you think it's important?
Because dodging abilities is a byproduct of anticipation. So let's say, for example, okay, I'm going to use two examples.
I can already think about some examples.
Yeah, let's use one through you are being the proactive one versus you being the reactive one, right? So let's say I'm playing Syndra, and then I looked at a VOD question channel today, my below platinum program. The person was like, kind of used their flash, and they all had to do was like, no, so the person was jammed in the corner. They're going to panic. Just don't E. Just Q, then they're going to flash, and then you can WE. The reason why that person rushed their abilities is because they don't have the foresight to understand like what that person would feel like in that situation. Mm. Like every form of ability usage is an extension of understanding the situation at hand and knowing what they would feel like and knowing what abilities they have access to, right? Both including summoners as well. Same thing as avoiding abilities. If you're trying to avoid a skill shot, you have to understand why that person is even throwing that skill shot in the first place. Like, you have to understand that, like, that champ and, like, how that person, like, you have to understand that person's kit. And so when I talk about the mechanical aspect of the game, I say to the client, I say, okay, I'll start by saying, this is what you should have done, but this is why. But when you're reviewing this yourself, I say to them, look at it from their perspective. This is my cue right now. This is my number one piece of advice for mechanics and stuff in skirmishing. Take time to look at it from their perspective. If you were that person here, what would you do and why? Mm. And it's like, oh yeah, I would have actually just flashed. I would have, no shit, I'm going to use my cue here. And that is what will lead them to having better, higher quality interactions.
You think that will help them click close to the character because they're trying to dodge it? Or
yes, because you can't, because clicking close to your character doesn't mean anything if you don't know what you're clicking close to your character for, in a way. It's kind of like, you have to feel the necessity to get better quality clicks before you actually get better quality clicks.
Yep.
Like, I feel like it's important to go the other way around. Like, you can do that. You can actually work on your clicking, then work on your anticipation, or you can work on your anticipation and understanding, and then you're clicking.
That's probably the better way to go around.
That's what I found is the better way around.
Yeah.
Because I've worked with clients, they have done that other way, but it's so much harder.
Yeah.
And the thing you got to realize with mechanics and micro as well, and skirmishing, at least this is my theory, is that when you understand a kit well, it actually propagates through all of your interactions with that champion. So you might, when you're looking at a micro situation where it's like, okay, I should have clicked here better, right? I could have clicked close to my character here. That doesn't really propagate through all of your other gameplay because that's a very niche scenario. But if you're tying it to the kit, it's like, well, in this situation, of course, Lux is going to go for a Q, so you should be anticipating that Q. You're now understanding that kit a lot better, and you're going to be in many scenarios where you can use that information to alter your behavior.
You're aware of that. So
then, yeah, that's at least what I experience.
Yeah.
I actually only think the mechanical aspect of clicking comes into play when like at a high level, really, is that's my kind of theory at the moment. And like, or the odd case where they don't have a PC gaming background, of course.
So,
but again, this could be wrong. This could be the jungle difference. Again, the type of people who are drawn to the jungle role might not be the most mechanically savvy player. So maybe you do have to emphasize the clicking, because most players in mid, at least even in my Blue Platinum program,
they're
not that bad mechanically. I don't actually see many clients. Yeah. There's a few, very few though, that are actually, I don't think, oh, the mechanics are holding them back. It's like, they just don't know what the fuck that champion does.
Mm.
You know?
I have experiences of both. I'll say probably more so just not thinking at all about the abilities. That's definitely going to be like 80% of the time rather than the actual clicking close to the character.
But there might be one that definitely...
Yeah.
Like in my program, there are outliers that do need to work on their clicking though. But yeah, it's both. It's a bit of both. It's interesting though.
All right. Our last question for today comes from Taylor. The title of this email is Building a Champ Pool. The classic champ pool. Building champ pool question. Hey, coaches and BBCers. Adore the podcast and everything you preach. We'd love to hear your thoughts on building a good and well-rounded champ pool. Other than enjoyment levels and not including too many high mechanic skill cap champs, are there any key factors that should influence who you include in your champ pool? I've been playing the game for just over a year now, only recently moving to jungle role and getting into all the details. I'm currently on about my 50th game with Lilia and still enjoying her, despite the anticipation of sticky points. I'm wondering who to try to build some mastery with alongside her in my champ pool for when she is picked, banned, or for comp reasons. Do I choose a champ with a similar identity in fight scaling? Can I choose a different playstyle without sacrificing my mental stack, getting confused between games because the playstyle is too different? What would you say your best tips are for building a champ pool? Who to include? And do you have any suggestions for me and others in this position?
I'll let you take over this one. He's a jungler.
So given playing the game for a year, plays Lilia. I'm going to assume that, you know, we're probably, you know, maybe, you know, bronze, silver. Is that a fair assumption?
Yep.
I don't know. That's going to depend on your baiting background.
Yep.
A person that's been playing for a year
could be gold.
Not even starting in ranked yet. Could be literally gold because they have a good PC background. Could be plat. So I'm going to answer this question given I'm thinking you're bronze. Enjoying Lilia currently. I mean, the way that I think about climbing in league, another way of, you know, sort of your model, at the end of the day, you get your most of your improvement and your, you know, LP, your climbing from one champion. Pretty much everyone is all times. Even champs with, even players with multiple pools, they're still, if you look at the season, they're still getting most of their LP with one champion. Would you agree?
Even in high level, I would say in high level, it's like one or two.
You could think about every season of like all the ones that you gained all your
It's like, yeah, like usually like two.
Yeah. So, you know, talking about building a champ pool at this point, like if you're just chilling with Lilia and, you know, your 50th game with Lilia, you know, you said you've been playing for a year. Like, I don't know how, what that time span looks like, but I'll just keep just all in on Lilia. Just only, I wasn't even thinking about a champ pool right now. If you were going to, you know, complement something with that, like, don't overthink it. Like, just play whatever you find fun, you know? Just you know, if you want to go with a champ sort of similar, you know, farming, AP champ, yeah, sure. Maybe Eve, Gwen sort of popped up and stuff like that. But just play what's fun. I wouldn't ever be thinking about this much, you know? Build up a champ, you'll build more experience. You'll see this champ, it's cool. But I would just be, going back to our beginning, you know, our Vayne one trick, EUS Challenger, the motivational video. Double down, triple down the details of Lilia. You're going to get more out of your journey that way rather than thinking about building a champ pool.
And I will say the only thing to add on to this is that I am actually a massive fan, especially the early on in your journey of like, say you play 100 games of Lilia or 8 until you're burnt and just try something else.
Then try something else.
And love then do it. Another 80 games of another champ. Like that way you can cycle through champions and you see the game through multiple different lenses. So I'll just keep playing Lilia. And then, look, maybe you want to play a second champ because Lily's banned. I doubt that's going to happen much or picked much. Yeah. But if it is picked, I don't know if it's super popular, but let's say it's super popular.
And just maybe play a game with a champion and just like fuck around and just lose the game and just have fun in that. And just keep playing Lilia. Like, keep playing Lilia. Don't think about like the champ. Like, honestly, I'll literally just keep playing Lilia. Pick any champion. Just pick any random champion and then just have a crack and then just go on the next. Because that would be happening so little.
It would happen so little.
Like one in every 10 games.
It's not like you're playing a super popular champion.
No.
And then you might get burnt eventually. It's like, oh, I'm not having fun anymore. As soon as you're not having fun, like you're getting burnt out of the champ, try something different. Pick another champ. Play Evelynn or whatever. And then play 80 games of Evelynn and then do that. And if you get a bit burnt, try something else. Mm. Like your journey early on should be keeping it fresh, having some fun, experience the game through different lenses, but really trying to nail down on that champ mastery one at a time. I agree. That's why our programs are centered around we recommend one tricking.
That's right. To start learning the game.
Yep.
What's your video with, was it Alois? One tricking is the most effective way to climb.
Yeah, even he is a massive advocate of one tricking. It comes from the top lane perspective.
Yeah. All right, that's it for our episode today, everyone.
Yep.
Good work. Let's keep on improving, and we'll see you guys next week.